This is F1 Debrief. He once again forgot to start the car. Coming up this week, we talk about Kerr's cars, time changes, tyre strategies, switching channels, paper aeroplanes, and dodgy point systems.
Can you explain about the way the teams mark out their pit boxes? It says a man who's actually sat about 10 yards away from us at the moment with one of his kangaroo TVs on. He says, please say hi to Mr. and Mrs. C and sidepodcast.com as well. He says, I've noticed that all the pit boxes are marked out different. As I read this out, I notice he's not even flickered.
No, he did. He looked around at us. I saw him look round.
His name is Nathan. Hello, Nathan.
Hello, Nathan.
Now he's waved to us as well. That's better.
Ah, another week, another shout out. We're so famous.
Oh, but that one was a surprise.
It was.
We were not expecting that one. We did not know that Nathan was in Malaysia.
We didn't. And we're going to hear more from him later as well.
All good stuff. My new best friend.
Good week, bad week.
It's been a good week for autograph hunters as Chandok and Alonso had a paper aeroplane race with the posters they were supposed to be signing. There are pictures floating around the web of these massive paper aeroplanes and the pair of them standing ready to throw. Sadly, we don't know who won.
That's the most important bit.
I know. It's been a bad week for USF1 as they've officially closed everything down now. The employees had been on unpaid leave, but now they've all been let go, apparently in the form of an email from Ken Anderson, which sounds about right. The email said it was all down to economic conditions and that there could be rehirings if things improved, but really, who would want to work for them now?
Can I have my old job back, please?
It's been a good week for driver interaction. Previously, we've complained that on the driver's parade lap, they all stand on the back of the lorry and just chat to each other. But in Malaysia, they did something different. Alex, who we are following as he follows F1 this year, posted on his blog, one thing that they did have was a bizarre Q&A session on the main straight, which involved small children taking it in turns to ask each driver a question, ranging from what is Rubens' favourite food to what is Weber's top road safety tip. He said it was random but funny, although he'd rather have had the normal parade.
Oh, I think that's... No, I like different. Different is good, and standing on the back of the lorry waving. The thing is, with Malaysia, there wasn't a lot of people in the crowd, so sending a truck around waving at nobody would be a bit pointless.
It's been a bad week for hotels as the Williams Eyewitness said that there were six teams staying at the Marriott and it seems all 400 F1 people present turned up with dirty laundry on Monday and it took the hotel more than 3 days to turn around all the laundry, leaving most people without fresh clothes. I bet Bernie doesn't take that into account when he sorts out these back-to-back races.
Apparently everything was okay by Sunday. Phew.
News and views.
The name that shall not be mentioned was mentioned this week.
Schumacher?
No, it's okay to talk about him.
Max Mosley?
Not him. Nope, although that is another name that should not be mentioned.
Flavio Briatore?
No, he's fine to be mentioned.
I don't know.
Kurs. The Kinetic Energy Recovery System. What would you call it? The thing that nobody wants to discuss this year because no teams are running it even though they're allowed to run it, which kind of makes Formula 1 out to not be the pinnacle of technology, really.
No. Well, they might bring it back.
Thank goodness.
Really?
Yeah.
A lot of people aren't a fan of the idea.
No, I like hers. I think it was an underused technology last year. I think it was embarrassing for the teams who couldn't get it to work. And I thought, although the regulations were too limiting, more could have been made of it. McLaren proved the system could work and work really well. And every other team failed to make it happen. I think Ferrari managed to use it all season long. But I would deem every other team a failure in the Kurs respect.
This weekend, FOTA got together for a meeting to discuss the future of the sport, as everyone is wont to do at the moment. They discussed Kurs making a return and something about wheel rims getting bigger.
Yeah, I don't really understand the wheel rim thing. I'm sure somebody will be able to explain it to us. It's something to do with not using tyre warmers, which will make Formula One cheaper and then it's easier to heat up the tyres or something. Not totally sussed how that works, but I like FOTA getting together and discussing Kurs again. I'm glad it's back on the agenda.
We've got a couple of quotes from people in the paddock. Eric Boulier, your best friend, he said, first of all, we already have the system. We've spent the money to develop Kurs, so to not use it anymore is a bit of a waste of money. The second thing is that we do believe for the Renault car manufacturer, there's a strong interest in using this technology regarding the development of hybrid technology in road cars, which is good. And that's kind of why it was introduced in the first place. But there's lots of new teams now that don't have links with manufacturers.
Yes, well, Toyota have gone and obviously BMW have gone, so that's two major manufacturers who could have found a use for Kurs, but they've both exited the sport, and in their place you've got smaller teams who are not necessarily linked to manufacturers. So Lotus do have a link, but Virgin Racing don't have any conceivable link to make the most of the Kurs opportunity.
Christian Horner said, "The most important thing is that they take time to study it properly, and it has to be cost effective. Making KERS is not our core competence, so we would rely on an engine manufacturer to supply it for us."
Which in this case would be Renault, and they've, as Eric has already said, they have a system sitting on the shelf.
And Martin Whitmarsh said, "I wouldn't say it's divisive, but a lot of the teams cannot afford KERS next year, and probably the majority cannot. That is why we need to have some understanding and find something that is affordable and worthwhile for the sport." I think that probably is divisive.
Well, the problem you've got, I guess, is if you're relying on engine manufacturers to come up with the KERS systems, then you're relying on Cosworth to come up with something. And obviously, you've got teams at the back running this cheap Cosworth engine, which isn't necessarily as competitive as engines at the front. And therefore, you've got another deciding factor, which makes the slower teams slower and the faster teams faster.
And at the moment, the split between the fast teams and the slow teams is big enough. We don't need any more.
Well, I'm curious to hear what Cosworth think of this, because their views will obviously be quite key for the smaller teams. And you've got X-Track, who are making a third-party gearbox for everybody. Maybe somebody like Flybrid could be encouraged to come on board and supply a standardised unit for anybody who wishes to buy one.
But then if you're making a standard unit, it kind of takes away from the whole development.
The problem with Formula One in the past is it mandates standard components. What you could say is, here's a standardised unit if you want one, which is quite cheap. But if you fancy spending money on developing your own, then go right ahead. And presumably for the likes of McLaren, that wouldn't cost them much money at all.
The other bit of news this week comes from Australia, because that race might be set for a time change.
And this is because the FIA they've done some tests.
Yeah.
What have they done and why have they done it?
Well, last weekend, they did some light tests as the race went on, and they found that by the end of the race, it was a bit dark.
Right. Well done. So this is straight from the Ministry of the Bleeding Obvious then, isn't it?
I think it is.
You run a race near to sundown, and then when it rains, it gets dark a bit earlier, and then no one can see what they're doing.
Exactly that.
I think we may have pointed this out last year.
Well, apparently by the end of the race, it really should have been a night race. So next year they're thinking they'll move it back up a bit.
Right, earlier.
Yeah.
So it's back to its normal time.
Well, we don't know what time they're going to decide on, but earlier definitely.
I think this week in Malaysia, F1 got away with it because the rain didn't come, and therefore running the race so late in the day meant that the darkness didn't fall early and the race didn't have to be curtailed. But you do have to wonder why Formula One is making the sport unnecessarily dangerous in the name of profit, because you know that these time changes have been mandated by Bernie so that he can increase television audiences, and the net result of that is you get less safe races as the sun is in the driver's eyes, or it starts raining and it gets dark early. It's danger for the sake of profit.
The race.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Malaysia, Suri Asia. We have now landed at Kuala Lumpur International Airport.
Hello, Side Podcast. Nathan here in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. I just got back from free practice at the Sepang International Circuit. And guess what? It's raining again. There wasn't an awful lot going on at the circuit today, but I always like Fridays because you can get all your shopping in before the crowds on Saturday and Sunday. Had a bit of an iPhone disaster this morning. Set my time to Kuala Lumpur time when I arrived. And last night before bed, synced it with iTunes, and it set it back to Thailand time. So missed free practice by an hour this morning. I'm a little bit disappointed with the program at Sepang this year. There's only the Formula 1 and Formula BMW, whereas in previous years there's been the Porsche Carrera Cup, GP2, and other support races, but this year only the two categories. However, after free practice 2 today, there was an air show by the Malaysian Air Force, and there's a classic F1 car display, but it's not open yet. It doesn't look as if the tyres are holding up so well here in Malaysia. I don't know if they can do just the one stop and then try and drag the car to the end as they have done in Bahrain. And how will the wet tyres hold out? If it rains? When it rains? I think it will be a wet race on Sunday. And probably a wet qualifying too. I was expecting a lot more people at the circuit today, considering that they give away free access on a Friday at Sepang Circuit. So it's a bit disappointing that there weren't a few more bodies around. Anyway, Lionel Richie's on in concert tonight here in Kuala Lumpur. And I think Julio Iglesias was on last night. And they've got Fatboy Slim and Wycliffe Jean on Sunday after the race. So they are trying. And I hope they can improve their attendance this year. Well, I'm going to head off now and try some of this amazing Malaysian food. And I'll try and send my own personal F1 Malaysian debrief after the race on Sunday. Bye-bye from Kuala Lumpur for now.
How fabulous is Nathan?
Really, really fabulous. Not only did he get us a shout-out on 5 Live, but he also edits in his own background sound effects.
You cannot ask for more than that. Nathan has raised the benchmark for voicemails.
Before we talk about the race, we need to cover a few things in qualifying, because let's face it, qualifying was unbelievable.
It was the best bit of the weekend.
As always. It rained.
Yes, heavily.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, in the case of some of the large teams, unexpectedly.
Which is weird, because it's rained like every day.
Yes.
Building up to it. But I think because so many of the top teams got it wrong, it feels like it was more of a system error, you know, a forecast error.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who are accusing McLaren of making a big mistake and Ferrari of making a huge mistake. But if you look at the what happened in qualifying, Webber actually followed both McLaren and Ferrari drivers out of the pit lane. So he came out, he was the last guy, last of the front runners to make a call to go out in that weather. Yet he still managed to put in a good lap time. And really, I think the big teams were let down by their drivers, because you saw Jensen put in a good time, but then throw it off track. You saw Lewis Hamilton spinning when he was putting in his fast time. Alonso went round and round and round and round, Lord knows how many times. And Massa was just slow. Yet Webber, who followed them out, he was the last man to come out, and yet managed to put in a great time, and therefore the driver saved the day. And I don't think so much blame can be put on the teams, really. It was the drivers just not being able to put in a time when they had to. Yes, if they have gone out earlier, no doubt their life would have been made easier. But in reality, it came down to driver talent, and none of the top guys had it.
So we know that Vettel made the right call and went out at the right time, but it wasn't necessarily that they made the wrong call. It's that they couldn't handle it when they did.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it was. I understand the drivers' lives were made harder because the team decided to keep them in the pit lane for longer than they should have, expecting the rain to stop, and it didn't. But some drivers had the talent to make it work and some didn't.
In F1 Digest for qualifying, I had a quote from Kobayashi, who said he felt he had lots of experience from Brazil, qualifying in Brazil last year, because that was crazy wet, wasn't it?
Well, he got into the top 10, so he did better than his teammate. But I'm shocked that we've got into a situation where Kobayashi, having done, what now, 4 races at the time of the quote, it was his 4th race, this was his 5th race, sorry, and you've got De La Rosa, who's obviously had all the experience of being the test driver and racing in the past, suddenly Kamui Kobayashi, he's the most experienced driver in the Sauber team. That is shocking.
It was definitely a bit mixed up. One of my favourite bits from qualifying was actually the queue jumping.
Oh, controversial.
Was so cheeky.
No, intelligent, well, smart, forward-thinking.
Thinking outside the box.
Everybody else, every single session, queues up one after the other in a nice, orderly file.
It's a done thing.
But there's no regulation to say that that's the way it's done.
It appears not.
I like Kubica taking the initiative and just driving past everybody and sitting at the end of the line. Unfortunately, it did him no good at all because the session was red-flagged and all the cars came back in.
And the next time round, Force India were smart enough to lock out the front row of the pit lane.
However, there wasn't that many cars lined up behind them, so it all came to naught anyway. Something I did want to mention about qualifying, and that is we got to see Michael Schumacher's seat being fitted. And it was mentioned, at first I didn't realise what we were looking at, but it was mentioned later on Greg Scarborough's blog that actually Michael Schumacher has a different seat to everybody else.
Right.
He has a padded seat.
Okay.
Now, I really hoped it was because he's getting on a bit and he needed a bit of padding on his poor bum to stop him getting bruised. But apparently he's had this since his Ferrari days. And there are 4 taps on his seat, which allows the team to inflate various airbags each side of him to give him a very comfortable and snug fit.
Hey, I got one of them in my car, back support.
It is. One of them is a lumbar support, but I think it's ingenious. I'm amazed that other drivers don't have this, or that Ferrari haven't retained this after he left. Maybe they do. Maybe we just don't know about it. But it was the first time I'd seen that on a seat, and you could just see the taps as they put it back into the cockpit.
Whilst we're talking about Mercedes, kind of, it was Rosberg's first front row ever.
That's a surprise. Hmm. But he is making the most of his new team.
Didn't take him long to
Good
get there.
Good to see.
As with everything in Formula One at the moment, qualifying was all about tyres.
Isn't it always? I hate tyres.
I know, me too. Webber picked the right tyres at the right time.
Yes.
And then he got pole.
And I suppose, much like Jensen at the last race, it's all about his experience and how he knew how to read the conditions. Yeah. Or is it just one massive gamble?
It does seem like it's just making that call, isn't it?
It's just a high-stakes roulette wheel. It's do you bet on red, do you bet on black? And there's no, I do not believe that Webber, inside his helmet, inside his car, inside the garage, for, what, 12 minutes that session was stopped for. I do not believe that he could possibly have looked out from where he was sitting and thought, do you know what, I reckon I'll be good enough to keep it on the island on inters. I just think he just gambled. What's Vettel doing? Okay, I can't beat Vettel in a straight fight. Let's do something different. And no doubt the guy will get loads of credit for keeping it out of the gravel whilst he was on the unfavourable tyre. And yes, he did make it work. And yes, it was a great lap from Webber. But it really just shows that tyres this season, and like all seasons, is nothing to do with how much experience the driver has. It comes down to who's willing to gamble, who has the least to lose. And apparently this makes good racing. I don't understand it. I don't understand why people are so fascinated in having tyre stops and why tyres are so important to people. But to me, it just seems like a complete farce.
Well, that leads us nicely onto the race. But I have to say up front that I was sort of told off for being very negative on Twitter and Facebook and such like.
Is it because we're bored to tears?
Well, yes.
By Formula One this year.
But I'm not going to be negative anymore. I'm only going to say positive things. You know that saying, if you haven't got anything positive to say, don't say anything. So everything
this could be a really quiet show.
Yeah, everything I'm going to say is positive. So let's talk about the race. Do you want to hear my thoughts about the race?
Is it just going to be pure silence? Is it white noise?
No, I have a thought.
One positive thought about Malaysia. Go on.
Degrassi finished the race. Woohoo!
With his very, very small fuel tank.
He did have to slow down towards the end.
People will talk about Degrassi's small tank. You know that? That's how rumours start.
Yeah. But that's good. It's good that they finally got to the end. It only took them three races.
Congratulations. But as they did, HRT managed to get two cars home.
Oh.
Not wanting to be negative or put a downer on it, but that's not that impressive to finally finish your first race on race three.
There is another thing I'm positive about. I'm positive I don't understand the tyre strategies, regardless of whether tyres refuelling, blah, blah, blah. I've been watching F1 for, what, 7 years now or something. Mm. And it has always been that the longer you go into a race before stopping,
yep,
the better for you.
Yes, because you run your tank low on fuel and you can go faster as your tank runs out of fuel.
Yeah, not anymore. Apparently, no. Stopping earlier is better. I can't get my head around this.
Well, it's not cut and dried. That's the problem. I mean, in Jenson Button's case, he stopped earlier and that strategy worked out really well for him because he passed loads of people as they were in the pits managing their stops, whereas Lewis Hamilton stayed out for a long time, but he had to pass lots of cars on track.
Yeah.
So from our point of view,
they both ended up in the same sort of position.
Well, they did, really, didn't they? Yeah. All the effort that Lewis put in, all those cars he passed, and Jensen just picked a better strategy and overtook everybody whilst they were stopped, which on one instance makes the lack of refueling a laughable decision, because you still get strategy, meaning you don't have to pass on track. And secondly, all the effort that Lewis put in basically came to nothing.
Well, Mr. Hamilton certainly made headlines anyway. It seems like he can't go a race without making headlines somehow.
He's causing controversy again.
Yeah.
Your take on the wiggle. Or the weave. The weave was more of a wiggle.
I think it's called weaving.
It was an exaggerated wiggle. Go on. Tell me what you think.
I mean, it looked very out of character. I've never really seen anyone do that before.
And I've never seen anyone do that before.
I can only assume that that makes it illegal. But at the same time, I've never seen anyone pull out at the end of the pit lane. Like Kubica, but you said that wasn't illegal.
Well, that's a fair point. No, it is against the regulations. I think somebody in the comments found out exactly which point regulation it was that says you may only move once on when defending a position. And the problem we have is, there's two ways of looking at this, I think. You're trying to encourage overtaking. Formula One needs more overtaking. Fine. So what Lewis did prevented Petrov from passing him.
Yeah.
So therefore, it was detrimental to overtaking. Therefore, you could construe that to be a bad thing. On the other hand, it was aggressive racing, which we like to see, and you don't really want to knock people who are out there trying. You complain when people just trail one car and follow another car. Well, Lewis aggressively prevented one car from passing him. So,
you know, if anyone's going to go for it, it's going to be Hamilton.
Absolutely. I guess what was really odd for me was this black and white flag.
Yeah,
which seemed to have been pulled from nowhere.
I don't think I've ever seen a black and white flag.
Never. I swear to God, I cannot remember ever seeing a black and white flag in Formula One. I don't know where they found it. Did they just make it up? Is it in? Did the marshals even have one?
Well, the commentators knew what it was, so I think it must be an actual thing.
Presumably, this is all down to the fact you've now got drivers in the stewarding room, is it?
Well, yeah, think I said that in the last show, didn't I, that there seem to be less penalties. And I can only assume that the drivers are saying, no, no, that's just a racing incident. This is how it works.
And this is, it was
calming
Johnny,
them down a bit.
It was Johnny Herbert in the steward box this week.
Yeah.
Now, I'll tell you, my biggest issue with this, before we talk about Lewis in depth, my biggest issue is the fact that the FIA promised a more transparent stewarding process. And yet one day after the race, we still haven't heard anything from Johnny Herbert as to what went on and why the decision was made. And we still know nothing as to how they came to the conclusions. Was it all down to Johnny? Did he make that decision? Did he have that much influence? Would it have been the same?
We don't really know what they do.
We don't know anything. And so what we were promised more stewarding transparency under Jean Todt's rule, and we haven't got that. We're just as clueless as we ever were. We don't know why this imaginary flag got pulled out of nowhere.
It's and was a real sudden, flag.
It was a what? Okay, but it got pulled out of nowhere and was suddenly assigned to Lewis Hamilton. I do not understand it. What Lewis did is against the regulations. Yeah. Was it on the Five Live Checkered Flag podcast? Davidson said, if he was on the judging panel, if he was in Johnny Herbert's place, he would have given a drive-through penalty for what Lewis did because it was wrong. And you don't want to encourage other drivers to do that. I mean, what happens at the next race? Are we going to see people weaving up and down the pit straight and just getting this imaginary flag?
We'll see a lot more wiggling.
We've given drivers too much wiggle room. That's the problem. I don't know. I think Lewis was out of order. And to the detriment of our enjoyment, Petrov was unable to put the pass in and the next corner, which he may have been able to do if there wasn't all that wiggling. And therefore, that was the end of the overtaking between those two drivers, which up till then had been really good. But unfortunately, that spelled the end of it. One thing I did want to mention, that's quite sad, really.
Sad boo-hoo or sad you're a geek?
No, like sad boo-hoo. It's that Michael Schumacher has really not had a stellar couple of races.
Nope.
But also, he's been a bit nice about the way he's gone racing. Michael Schumacher used to be controversy. It was just another word for controversy in the race. And yet, in three races, he's not upset anybody. And yet, Lewis Hamilton is attracting this controversy like a magnet. He's more Schumacher than Schumacher.
I did think it was funny that he got his car impounded last week. This week, he was all over breaking the rules. And really, there wasn't the same level of
headlines.
That's
a good point. He got pulled over and his car impounded for what was perceived to be dangerous driving.
When he is
actually driving dangerously on track, nothing at all. You do wonder if the phrase Lewis the Hoon might stick, though, if he keeps doing what he's doing.
Now, I know I said I would be nice and positive about the race, and perhaps that's a bit difficult. I might have stretched myself a bit there. I'm really not going to be positive about the BBC.
They let themselves down.
They screwed it up royally.
Qualifying show was desperately, desperately awful, unlistenable, unwatchable. I had to turn it off.
It's that age-old thing of standing outside the garage just as they fire up the engines.
ITV had the same problem, and the BBC have not learned from them, and it just makes watching Formula One programming impossible.
They cut off the qualifying programme early as well, or maybe not early, but because qualifying overran, they didn't have time for any post-session analysis.
No, on the red button, they did have the press conference, but somehow somebody stuffed up the audio track.
Oh, yeah.
So you had a bunch of interviews, but you couldn't hear the press conference.
And then let's talk about the race, because it happened on Easter Sunday. And so, of course, what you're going to do is put the start of the race on BBC One and then halfway through change to BBC Two, right?
That isn't what I would do, no.
Makes perfect sense.
No, it doesn't. What makes perfect sense is just to put it on BBC Two. That's what I would have done.
We had a comment from Dave who said, Easter Sunday, F1 race live versus family day out. No problem, thinks me. Have F1 races set up on series link to record, so it will be there for me to watch when I get home. Just have to stay away from the news, etc. Great day out. Now watching recorded live F1 Malaysian race. Awesome till lap 33 when the BBC decide they're now moving to BBC Two halfway through the race. Whoever called that, you are a Muppet.
Yes.
Exactly, Dave.
Here, here. All I can say, I mean, to be honest with you, to me, Formula One should outrank religion and therefore should have just been on BBC One. Failing that, it should have been solely on BBC Two.
One or the other, but not both.
Absolutely. Don't split the difference. That's just stupid.
Most of the time, we disagree with Bernie on quite a lot of things, start times, the calendar, all kinds of things. But you found yourself agreeing with him.
Unusually. It's very rare that I agree with Bernie, but in this instance, I think I do. He said after the first race in Bahrain that we shouldn't jump to conclusions. We shouldn't make any knee-jerk reactions. Let's give it three races and then decide. Now, Malaysia was the third race, and even though there was a rain-affected There was rain affected excitement in Australia, and there was a rain affected grid in Malaysia. Bernie has actually come out and said, okay, we've had our three races, now we have a problem.
Yeah, in the Telegraph, he said, don't be fooled, we've been lucky with the rain, we have got to do something. For the first time, the teams have realised that they have to do something about it. We don't need reverse grids, we just need more overtaking. Which is what everyone says, but Bernie has changed his mind.
Well, no, he hasn't changed his mind. He said, we'll give it three races, and then we'll decide. And that's what he's done. He's given it three races, he's looked at the situation, and he can see the problem. Now, he's blaming the teams, but at least he's acknowledging there is an issue. He's not saying, okay, because he could have come out and said, well, actually, I said three races, but one had rain, the second one had rain in qualifying. Let's give it two or three more races, and let's give it another five races and another six races, and, oh, look, the season's ended. It's fine. That's what I expected him to do, just to continually pass the buck, pass the blame, and deny there's an issue. I like that he's turned around and said, actually, yeah, it's the team's fault, but I do admit we do have a problem here. We've been lucky. We've been so lucky with the weather. And I do hope that Formula One is lucky going forward. I hope we have rain in China and rain in Spain, because that's really the only hope we have for an excitement. But at least Bernie acknowledges that now.
He also said in the interview, make the front wing smaller and get rid of the double diffuser, which is fine. That's his suggestion. And then he went on to something ridiculous about getting a beautiful girl on the grid for everyone in the top 10.
No, well, you say ridiculous. Okay, I can understand why that comment annoyed you. However, I do think he might be onto something.
Don't be ridiculous.
No, I'm sure this will upset a lot of people.
It upsets me.
Right now, well, forget the beautiful girl thing. That's not necessary. But right now, reverse grids, random grids, success ballast. I'll take anything that Bernie's got right now to make the race more entertaining. Because, yes, we had some enjoyment and some entertainment coming from the back of the grid with all the out-position top teams. Okay, that was interesting. But if you look at the front of the grid, that was the real race. That gave you real insight into what Formula One is like in 2010 on a dry day, because you had, I think the race was decided within the first 10 seconds. The run down to the first corner, that set places 1, 2, and 3, and nothing, absolutely nothing changed during the entire race at the front of the grid whatsoever. It didn't matter what tyre strategies were tried, didn't matter what anybody considered doing. Vettel took the lead into the first corner. Mark Webber was asleep, and that's how the race finished. So yeah, we were lucky with some bits going on at the back, but really, that was dire in terms of excitement. Well, how many times did you actually see Vettel on screen? For the pit stop, that was basically it. Yes, Mark Webber did have a sticky wheel. Yes, his challenge was blunted by that, but really, there was no chance Mark Webber was going to overtake. And because we've lost refueling, because we've lost the strategy element of races, we've really lost all the excitement at the front of the grid. If we weren't lucky with what happened on Saturday, there would have been nothing, absolutely nothing worth watching in Malaysia, because watching the Red Bull run off with the race win, run off into the distance and never look back, that's not interesting. There's nothing worth watching there. So maybe a reverse grid would have helped. Maybe a random grid would have made a difference. And maybe that is what Formula One needs to look at this year. Yeah, I know people out there are probably having some palpitations and
minor
heart attacks. The F1 purists will cry foul that it's not how real racing should be. But those same F1 purists took away refueling, and what they've given us is a lack of entertainment. So I don't care what the F1 purists think about what we need to do this year. I'm discounting all those views. Anyone who says that the lack of refueling is somehow made Formula One better is clearly insane, because what we've got is really, really, really dull races. We had a dull race in Bahrain. We were lucky in Australia, and we had another dull race at the front in Malaysia. I understand that reverse grids are a bit Mickey Mouse. I understand that what they do in BTCC isn't ideal. But the situation we're in, we have to do something. We cannot watch more races like we watched this Sunday. I was bored to tears after the first lap. It never got better.
Well, I couldn't possibly comment because I'm being all positive.
Oh, sugar.
It's
did I bring
good.
A negative vibe on it?
You did.
I'll tell you what was positive. Alonso did really well with a car that was a bit knackered. That was good to watch.
I'll tell you what else was positive is that we had lots of voicemails again. You know, we encourage voicemails after the race, 01212887225, and we've had loads for this race, so I think we should hear from some other people.
Hello, Lukey here. That was a pretty cool race. It was, you know, it could have been worse. It could have been Bahrain-esque. I think that's going to be a catchphrase this year. It could have been Bahrain. Like last year, it could have been Abu Dhabi. But yeah, it could have been Bahrain, but no, it was all right. It was pretty good. It was, you know, for a dry race in Malaysia, they're usually average, and that was a bit above average. That was, like, not, it was not awesome, but it was not average. It was kind of awesome. if that makes sense. But yeah, it's a pretty good race. We got another sound clip from Rob, of course. Rob is Malaysia at the moment. Every year he seems to have something awesome to say to Felipe, baby. And so yeah, it was a bit disappointing to be a Rubens fan because he once again forgot to start the car. In general, he didn't have a very good race, but, you know, Vettel ran away with it. Mark Webber, it's a shame he didn't win. But lots of overtaking, and Karan Chandhok overtook someone. He nearly won, just 15 or so places off. So, yeah, pretty good race.
Hello, Sci Podcast. This is Alex Antonov calling. Just a quick comment on the point system. I think the new point system was brought in to try and encourage more importance being placed on winning and to encourage drivers to race for the win, which always seems like a very strange idea and something that drivers would just be doing by themselves anyway. We can see that the new point system has obviously worked exactly as intended, as the leader of the championship after three races is Felipe Massa, who hasn't won a race. Oh, well, never mind. Keep up the good work, Sci Podcast.
This is Steve, McLaren fan, back for the third voicemail in a row, prompted by the fact that the Sci Podcast tweeted just a second ago, or it could have been earlier in the day, I don't know, saying that not looking forward to the rest of this season, looking forward to next season is boring, or I could be getting confused. I don't know how you can possibly think that. And just as a side note, either I haven't got enough friends or I keep phoning in too often, but you were the third person on my last dialed list. Anyway, how on earth you can say it was boring when you had two Ferraris, two McLarens towards the back of the field? From the very start, you had Hamilton going up one side, you had Button going up the other side. Incredible performance by both of those today, more so Hamilton, going from 20th to 6th. Did a bit of weaving here and there, but come on, isn't it about time he got a break? It was, Spa or Monza 2 years ago where he got unjustly penalised. McLaren get £100 million fine and Renault just get a tap on the wrist and told not to do anything for the next 2 years. Come on, the guy deserves a break. What else went on? You had Hamilton and Button, with Hamilton coming out of the pits and would he come past in front of Button or not? You had Schumacher going out with mechanical failures, which is always nice to see. That must have been good for you. You know how much you hate Schumacher. You had Alonso and Massa and Button and Alonso going off in a big cloud of smoke. That's karma for stopping 3 years ago and making Hamilton go into the back of him. You also had Sittel and Hamilton. It was amazing. And you had, would there be rain? Would there not be rain? And off the track, you had Eddie Jordan's sweaty shirt, which everybody in the whole of Malaysia seemed to be talking about. I did think they were a bit harsh on him. Anyway, last week's race was incredible. Hang on, last week, it was last week in Australia, you said it was the best race ever. And this one was pretty good compared to Bahrain. Well, I said it was incredible. How can you say it's boring? I'm going on a bit now. Anyway, as a McLaren fan, I was absolutely thrilled with today's race. Little tiny bit disappointed that Lewis didn't get a bit more, but considering I predicted the placings for 1, 2, 3 and Hamilton and I was just one place away for Button, I think it was pretty good. Anyway, as you can tell, I thought it was a good race. You should really give it a chance. It's got loads of overtaking. There's lots more to come. There's only 9 points separating the top 7 races. It's going to be a wicked season. Really is. Promise you. Stick with it. And besides, the enthusiasm's got to be there to carry on with Side Podcast. Is that right? Anyway, see ya in China and the comments. And go to mclarenfan.wordpress.com. See ya. Bye!
Hey, it's RJ. Just want to talk about the Malaysian Grand Prix on the scores. And, it's a decent little race. Assuming you don't support either Sauber or Timo Glock, which in other case it's quite depressing when you see them all out after like 9 laps. And the race was arid anyhow. It wasn't spectacular, it wasn't brilliant, it wasn't never going to win greatest races. Yeah, but it wasn't boring, Buenos. It was, average, steady average. And, average races are once in a while. There's a few overtaking. I was massively impressed with Alguersuari. I mean, I don't know what he's done. Didn't crash the starts. And Petrov, he put a few battles before he conked out. Yeah, and some of the rookies impressed, you know. Yeah, I didn't like the race, if I'm honest, as a biased point of view. So if we could skip Malaysia next year, that'd be all right. Somehow enjoyed China. And do check my blog, northernwolf.wordpress.com, where I'm doing a championship comparing all the new teams and that. Cheerio.
Hi, it's the podcast, it's PM here. We've had a good week's worth of racing, haven't we? We had a fantastic race last weekend in which rain helped. We had a fantastic race today in which rain helped. We had rain in qualifying, which produced a mixed grid, and it produced some overtaking, which is what we've been after, no? I mean, Mr. Fee could bemoan the fact that we don't have refuelling to manufacture the changes in positions, but all we need is just, like, sprinklers at the side of the track activated during qualifying to, you know, throw a spanner in the works. This is great. It's shaping up to be a really good championship. I'm looking forward to China, especially since the weather forecast is a bit iffy. Yeah, it's looking great. I can't wait for Silverstone, mostly to see what it should be like. And Canada's going to be back on the schedule, so we should see more tarmac failing to make the grade. But anyway, good times, eh? See you later. Bye.
Feedback. Let's begin with PJ Heron, who we heard from, I think it was in the last show. He's back again with his thoughts on Malaysia. It says, another late night with F1, but what true fan wouldn't stay up until 6 in the morning watching a race? So awesome to see Vettel take Luscious Liz to the podium at Sepang. This guy is the future of F1. Rosberg showing that he can be fast in more than just practice sessions is an exciting thought, as we may see Mercedes really start to catch up to the top three teams. The Renault's threatening with some speed, also as Kubica finishes strongly and Petrov shows good passing skills before retiring. It's great to see new drivers like Petrov and Hülkenberg showing us there is still plenty of talent out there. I also think Alguersuari has a future in F1, while it's just a matter of time before Toro Rosso trims away the belly fat that they call Sebastian Buemi.
Ooh!
Harsh. Jensen tried his heroic first pit stop again, only to find his tread wearing thin as Hamilton showed some maturity behind the wheel. Nice that HRT got both cars over the line, but the novelty of these newer, slower teams is starting to wear off. How frustrating must it be for established drivers like Kovalainen and Trulli to be relegated to the back of the pack? Unfortunate result for Alonso, but how bad can you really feel for a guy in a Ferrari? Lots of passing and a very close championship race. Who said F1 is boring? Take care and keep up the great work.
I did.
Yes,
I will say, I understand, thank you, PJ Heron, but Nico Rosberg was up there because he was unchallenged, because all of his nearest competitors were nowhere to be seen, and he did well. I nearly said he got lucky. He didn't get lucky. He did well in qualifying. He was the fastest of the full wet runners, and so it was an exemplary qualifying run from Nico. However, he only achieved what he did today, I think, because he was basically unchallenged, and that really probably shouldn't be used as a benchmark for the rest of the season.
My next message is from Dave, who says, I don't know why I let it wind me up, but how on earth has Vettel overtaken Button in the Castrol rankings this morning? Reading Castrol's report, it says, Sebastian Vettel took the lead of the Castrol rankings from Jenson Button for the first time, thanks to a stunning pole position lap at the Australian Grand Prix. Although the Red Bull driver retired from the race, as he did last year, he achieved a higher score than he did 12 months ago in Melbourne by virtue of his excellent qualifying performance. This meant that while Button took a superb first McLaren victory in his race, his failure to repeat his pole of 2009 meant that his points total decreased by a large enough amount to drop him behind Vettel. I'm guessing this provides a little insight into how these baffling rankings work, but I'm still none the wiser as to its logic, as it seems to suggest that if a driver cannot match his performance of the previous year for a specific race, then he's punished for it, whereas someone who exceeds their performance over the previous year deserves more points. Surely a GP win is worth far more than a pole position, regardless of how well the driver did the previous year. Much prefer your rankings, Christine. At least there is an element of logic behind it compared to this. All the best, Dave.
Okay, it's worth mentioning that that happened post-Australia when Jenson Button won the race.
Yes.
Sebastian Vettel crashed out of the race.
Yes.
And somehow Vettel jumped Button in the rankings. It is beyond ridiculous. I noticed, just for a laugh, this week, following on from Dave's comments, that Jenson Button has climbed the rankings again, despite, where did he finish this race?
Like eighth or something.
Something like that. And Vettel won it. And now they're joint top. So It seems the worse Jensen does, the higher he climbs. And the worse Vettel does, the higher he climbs. It is utter nonsense. Well, I do not believe anyone can peddle this garbage for money.
Reasons it doesn't make sense is that Button is very rarely going to be able to do better than he did last year, especially at the beginning of the season, because he won 6 out of 7 races,
but
didn't he?
The thing is, forget that, though. That doesn't come into it, because what difference does it make how well he did last year? Michael Schumacher wasn't racing last year.
No.
Therefore, everything he does this year, despite how hopeless he is going to be better than what he did last year when he just fell off a bike.
What are they going to do at the new races? What are they going to do at Canada, which wasn't there last year?
I don't know. The entire thing is bunkum from beginning to end. It's laughable. It's hilarious. The amount of comments we had on the site about how just the disbelief as people saw these rankings come in and thought, hold on a second, the guy who won the race, this is supposed to rank the best drivers in the world now, not the best drivers in the world as compared to 2000 and whatever it was last year. What year is it? 2009. it's utter cack. I can't believe that Castrol are paying for this. I'm stunned they don't can the whole project.
Right, do you want the good news or the bad news?
Oh, I need some good news.
Okay, this is from Peter, who says, I've been an F1 fan since 2001, and I just wanted to say that I thought Christine and team have done a great job here at SoPodcast.com.
Go team!
Living in the US, access to F1 is less than easy, but your podcast helps me stay in touch, and frankly, saves a ton of time. Not every race, dare I say it, is worth spending 2 hours watching.
Tell me about it.
Keep up the good work, and thanks again.
Not a problem.
Now the bad news. This is from Carlos, who says, love the Digest podcast, but please, Mr. C, have a listen to what's on namethatdriver.com. There's no need to ever say Heike or Kubica ever again. Cheers, but, Carlos.
Carlos, I don't do the Digest podcast.
No. We have had this conversation so many times. He doesn't care about pronunciation, whereas I get all uptight about it.
I think what I should do is vary drivers' names. So one week I'm going to call him Heike, the next I'm going to call him Heike, and the week after I'm going to call him Hokey Cokey.
Well, what I would say in your defense is that Tony Fernandez can't spell Kovalainen's name, and he's his boss.
That's true. That's the best way to be, though. I'd like to be so insignificant my boss doesn't know my surname. That's the best way to be. Go Hokey 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 Hokey.
Next up, Mark says, hi there, I just finished watching the GP of Malaysia, thank God for DVRs. And here we go again, 3 races into the season, and it's a pretty sure bet the championship will go to one of the top 10 point leaders. Make that top 9, because I doubt Schumacher will catch up with Massa, Alonso and Vettel. How boring is that? Now, sure, we always knew the contenders were McLaren, Ferrari, Red Bull and Mercedes, so it boils down to 8 drivers. Add Kubica, pronounced Kubica.
Says who?
And maybe Barrichello, and that's the top 10 again. Again, how boring is that? I came up with a point system to keep us, the paying spectators, interested and entertained for at least halfway into the season. It goes like this. The last driver that finishes the race gets 1 point, the penultimate driver gets 2 points, and so on. The winner gets most points, but it depends on the number of drivers that finish the race. In Bahrain, Alonso would have gotten 17 points. In Australia, Button would have gotten 14. And in Malaysia, Vettel would have gotten 17. With this system, 14 drivers would have over 10 points versus 9 with the current system. 21 drivers would have points versus 14. It would encourage finishing the race, which is good for F1, the spectators, the sponsors, etc. I attached a spreadsheet for your comment. If I ever get any money for this stuff, I'll treat you and Mr. C to a juicy filet mignon. Cheers, Mark.
Wow, I completely support this. If only because I might get a juicy filet mignon. How do you pronounce that? Is that correct?
Have filet I got
that
mignon. Right?
Filet mignon. Someone's going to complain, by the way. You know that. But as Alex pointed out in his earlier voicemail, the current point system is clearly rubbish, because Massa hasn't won a race and yet he's leading it. So this can't be any worse, Mark. So I'm going to go with your suggestion, and I think we should put a proposal forward for the FIA to accept that point system for next year.
The Drivers' Championship does seem quite close, though. There's lots of drivers with 30-ish points, whereas before it was Button waltzing away with it, wasn't it?
Yeah, but isn't Vettel going to waltz away with it? I can't see. I mean, they've got their funky little, they've got their ride height adjuster, which Christian Horner denies that it even exists, even though everybody in the paddock knows that it does. And I think that's given the team a material advantage over everybody else.
Housekeeping.
We aren't doing a show next week, but that's okay, because we've given you lots and lots of podcasts this past week to keep you entertained.
Oh, yes. There was a great Joe show, which was fantastic. We haven't heard from Joe for about a month, so it was good to catch up.
Not
lots
since
of things.
The evening with.
That's true. And I think one of the comments was it was the best Joe show ever.
Wow.
So that must have been a good one. And also we spoke to Stuart.
I know. Stuart Codling, who you've probably heard of at various points in the debrief show, but now he gets his own show all to himself.
And highly recommended. Very, very, very much worth listening to.
I don't think my being positive worked very well.
Well, if you're taking the week off, maybe there'll be time to refresh.
Yeah.
And have another look at Formula One, possibly. Maybe something will happen in the next couple of weeks that will inspire us, and maybe China will just be a wet race and be brilliant. I don't know. We've got what, 10 days off now. We're going to recharge our batteries and see if we can find something in Formula One worth liking.
We're optimistic.
You say that.